Digitization is accelerating transformations and propelling growth across virtually all industries.
All of these acquisitions have been so strategic in terms of the changing evolution of how people buy, of how people use their money, the digitization of commerce and financial services overall.
That's Peggy Alford, Senior Vice President of Core Markets at PayPal and a member of Facebook's Board of Directors. Peggy began her career as an accountant, where she was exposed to a variety of companies and began to develop a deep interest in what drives a business and enables it to grow. This curiosity continues to fuel her today as she oversees the commercial teams for PayPal's largest established markets. Peggy's known for her smart, dynamic, and compassionate leadership. That's the foundation of her success at aligning diverse teams around a common goal.
What can be the hardest within a company as it scales is making sure that all of the various parts of the company are collaborating and working together well. You can have the very best strategy, but if the teams aren't working together to ensure that they're operating together towards the goal, then that's usually a big part of why a strategy fails.
I'm Merrill McDonald, and my passion is helping people and organizations navigate the human struggle of change. I believe that when we relinquish control, we open up amazing new possibilities. This podcast, Let Go and Lead, is about what happens when we loosen the reins. In it, I speak with business leaders, academics, and creative thinkers to hear about their career and life journeys and gather what they've learned about change, transformation, and creativity along the way. I'm so pleased to welcome Peggy Alford. So today I'm with Peggy Alford from PayPal. So Peggy, you've had quite a year this year, from returning to PayPal to being named to Facebook's board of directors. Wow, that's absolutely incredible. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah, it has been an amazing and eventful year. You know, I had the opportunity to work for a couple years with Mark Zuckerberg and his wife Priscilla and helping build the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, which is the foundation that Mark and Priscilla funded with 99% of their Facebook wealth, but never lost touch with my colleagues at PayPal and have been incredibly excited by what PayPal has built over the last several years since I left. And I wanted to be a part of it. I wanted to have a key operating role in helping PayPal through its next stage of growth. But I had the privilege of continuing to work with Mark in that I went through the process of joining Facebook's board of directors. And what's so exciting about that is for all of the challenges that Facebook is facing right now in terms of what, you know, sort of social tools are going to look like in the future as we wrestle with both the need for privacy and, you know, security around interactions, while also people wanting to be able to share lots of different ways their lives. And so being a part of that conversation and helping with the solutions as to how to balance those things has been a privilege to be able to join Facebook's board just in May of this year. So it's been a very exciting year.
And what an incredible testament to your relationship that could work out that way. I would imagine Facebook's got to be one of the most coveted boards on the planet.
It definitely was quite the honor to be asked. And, you know, I find it incredibly exciting to be part of this next conversation around how social media and surrounding technologies impact how we interact as a society and some of the challenges in sort of figuring out how to do that in a way that both enables the reason why it was created in the first place while tackling some of these privacy and other concerns that the broader society has with Facebook and other companies like it.
And it must have been so incredible when you went back to PayPal. I mean, being a boomerang is always an interesting thing, right? I think you'd spent about 6.5 years with the company.
Yes.
Stepped out for a year and a half. What was it like when you went back?
You know, what's so funny is it felt like a reunion. You know, PayPal has felt like a family. I was here, you know, as you mentioned, for 6.5 years, but I actually started at eBay, which at the time owned PayPal. In fact, I came to eBay to work in the group that was doing merger and acquisitions. And the very first acquisition, the month I joined, was PayPal. And so I've been associated with eBay and PayPal and one of their subsidiary companies that they used to own called Rent.com for almost 15 years. And so stepping away and joining Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, while it was an amazing opportunity and super exciting, was a really tough thing to do because, you know, the folks had really become a family. A lot of the people that are here today had been here over the time or joined during the time that I was at eBay and PayPal. And so it definitely felt like a reunion. And it's kind of funny because I was telling some folks that were asking me this question when I returned, you know, what it's like to be back. It really felt like there was many things that I was saying, wow, we haven't figured that out yet, as wow, things are so different. Who are these new companies that we've acquired in the last few years? And so it was a mix of both the same as well as, like, you know, wonderful change that I'm seeing and I'm now part of in terms of really figuring out what we're going to do next at PayPal.
What do you think were the biggest changes?
Well, you know, the biggest changes actually have to do with, you know, we have done a lot of additional partnering at PayPal, and we've also acquired a number of companies. I think in the past, we had a few, you know, partnerships that we did with companies in the space that might be considered, you know, competitors in the past. Now we're doing so many partnerships with the likes of the largest players in the payment space. And we've acquired a lot of companies just in the last 2 or 3 years, iZettle, Swift, Zoom, Paydiant. We now can help with things like demand generation and, you know, helping small businesses have an offline footprint as well as an online footprint through our acquisition of iZettle. We're able to, you know, really extend our credit offerings through some of the Swift network capabilities. We've got Venmo, which is really resonating with a new generation of people who want to be able to connect both the social aspects of their lives with the payment aspects of their lives. And so all of these acquisitions have been so strategic in terms of the changing evolution of how people buy, of how people use their money, the digitization of commerce and financial services overall.
It's been interesting to watch too, because each of these companies have their own unique culture, leadership style, and of course, PayPal is known for being very purpose-driven, very values-driven.
Yes.
How are you really keeping the culture, your purpose and values so strong?
You know, honestly, that's actually one of the biggest challenges when companies do acquisitions, PayPal included. And that, what I mean by the challenge is that the trick is you want to integrate the businesses enough that you're able to realize the synergies and the value that made you want to acquire that company in the first place, while not losing the magic and the culture and the innovation that occurs in each of these companies that made us attracted to them in the first place in terms of adding them to the family. And so it's a real sort of balance that is really tough to do. We don't always get it right. It's something that we've realized over time. Each company is going to be a little bit different in terms of, you know, how deeply we integrate, how much we, you know, bring the teams together and have them work with the teams at PayPal versus allowing them to sort of have the opportunity to work on their own just at scale using a lot of the innovation and technology that we have at PayPal. So I would say there's not an easy answer, but getting that balance right is what makes an acquisition either successful or not.
Yeah, it's really a challenge, isn't it? Because you don't want to kill what you just paid for.
Exactly. And often these companies, you know, that are smaller, that's the very thing they don't want to lose either. They don't want to lose the speed of innovation. They don't want to lose the special culture that they've built within, you know, what started out as a few people and now is, you know, grown and achieved scale. But at the same time, they want to, you know, be able to capitalize on the broad set of capabilities and the deep both consumer and business, you know, customer base that PayPal has built. And so it definitely is a real challenge.
Yeah. And I'm particularly interested in talking to you about this because I think it's interesting. You're one of six children. You come from a family where many of you were adopted, broad, diverse backgrounds. You run a whole diverse team across different cultures, time zones, markets. What have you learned? Like from your childhood, have you learned a lot that you brought forward to your leadership?
Honestly, I think I have. It's funny because you don't really realize it when you're in it, how your upbringing shapes you. But when I grew up, it was the 70s. I grew up in the Midwest. I had wonderful, educated, purpose-driven parents who were Caucasian in the Midwest and adopted 6 kids that were of all different cultures and all different races and also were foster parents during that time. And so that was crazy in itself. I like to joke that my parents were the Madonna and Angelina Jolie of their time with a lot less money before it was cool. But that was our reality and that's the way we grew up. And I think what it shaped in me was, you know, my parents were very much about seeing people as who they were and celebrating the differences and the diversity that makes our society so rich. And that's just how I grew up. And so I often found myself just actually confused by folks who didn't see the world that way and had issues with people because of who they were or because of, you know, the culture that they grew up in or their race or ethnicity, their gender. It's just not something that was part of how I grew up. And I think what that shaped in me was, number one, I was used to being the minority in the room. That's just something that was part of my reality from the time that I was little, all the way through when I was being educated and all the way through when I entered the workforce. And so for me, that was just sort of part of who I was and what I was used to. And so I actually saw the benefit in that.
And have you found since you grew up that way that is it more difficult or easier to help other people see it?
I think it's easier because I approach it from sort of a natural and logical framework and mindset. And so I find myself a lot of times, you know, just sort of questioning, well, why wouldn't we want to make sure that we had full perspective before we make a decision? Why wouldn't we want to live as our customer base lives and join all of the various characteristics that make up both our customers today or the customers we want and make sure that we're making the right decision using the perspective of lots of different flavors of people? And so I think when you talk about it that way, it's one thing that resonated with me very much when I met Dan Shulman for the first time. It's how he thinks. He thinks about the fact that it's good business to make sure you have a wide perspective before you make a decision because you get to the right decision, as opposed to the way some people approach diversity, which is, well, it's the right thing to do and we probably need to give everyone a chance. And we shouldn't just hire people like we would prefer that look just like us. That's not the mindset that I grew up in. It was actually that, you know, you do want to make sure you understand what lots of people think so that you have full knowledge before you make a decision. And that, I think, is the best way to think about why it makes sense, why diversity makes sense.
And I imagine you've taken that philosophy to your board positions as well.
I have. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, what's been so exciting about the boards that I've been a part of is that each one of them, while very different individually, are thinking about how to get to that next stage of growth by ensuring that they have a broad set of perspectives around the table. And that definitely is the case with Facebook, where, you know, if you look at the people that are on the board, they come from a wide range of disciplines. You know, diversity is not just in terms of race and ethnicity and gender. It's also from, you know, what formed your perspective and what are the types of businesses that you've worked in, both geographically as well as like different sectors of business. So I think that a lot of companies now that are looking to achieve their next stage of growth are thinking about how to ensure that they can think about not just the customers that they have today, but what those customers, like what are their prospective customers and what do they need to do to resonate with those businesses and consumers that they want to do business with in the future.
And being on a board is a very different experience than working inside the company and being in a management role. What are you learning from that?
You know, it's funny because when you're part of a management team, you have a responsibility not only to help frame what the idea is or frame the strategy, but then to go execute. And a lot of times operationalizing a strategy is the hardest part. Executing against a wide range of priorities where, you know, you can't always impact how the macro environment is going to cause you to have to change course. And when you're on a board, you know, you're not a part of the everyday. You're not a part of the execution plan. You are meant to bring your perspective and skill set and work with the other members of the board and the leadership of the company to help give advice and consult effectively on, you know, how to think about how the strategy should be executed within the company. It's definitely a different way of leading because you kind of do have to step back and let them then implement in a way that they see fit.
And so you're on the board of Facebook. And then what's your other board position?
So I'm on Macerich, which is a real estate investment trust in the sort of mixed use mall space. And then I'm also currently on SoFi, which is a next generation financial services company. But I'm going to be rolling off of that board because of coming back to PayPal.
So that's interesting, too, because they're such different industries.
Yes.
You're getting a great swath of experience there as well.
Yeah. Although, you know, Macerich, while it seems like that seems random, I think, you know, what Macerich is really trying to do is figure out what the next generation of malls really is. Like, how are consumers looking to interact with work, with living, with buying patterns. And, you know, so there's a lot of focus on sort of the digitally native, vertically integrated. So if you think about like Peloton and Tesla and Casper, they were born online, but now they want an offline presence as well. And so it has a good tie-in to how PayPal thinks about their customer base as well, and sort of the digitization of commerce and the changing behaviors of consumers and their buying decisions.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it seems like a lot of the malls that are really successful now are becoming much more experiential.
Absolutely. Experiential as well as integrating housing with, you know, the gym, SoulCycle or Peloton or an old school gym that's like on the property with, you know, living and, you know, WeWork and industrial, you know, different ways of working, and all of that integrated into one experience in an urban setting is something that is becoming more and more prevalent.
So I'm going to switch gears for a minute and just ask you a little bit about your career, because I thought it was really interesting that you began as a CPA and you actually had a pretty successful finance career before going into general operations. You were in HR. I mean, you've had a pretty broad range of experience. Can you tell us a little bit about what you learned along the way? And were there different things you learned from various functions?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I started my career in accounting. I was a CPA. And that was really born from the fact that I was in college and I was pre-law until my sophomore year, wanted to be a criminal defense attorney, and then realized that I didn't have the means or I needed a job after college. I didn't need 3 more years of school. And so I researched majors in college that you could get a job out of college with. And accounting is one of those that you can go work for a firm, you can go work, every single company of any size has an accounting department. And so that's really what drove my decision to go into accounting. And so I was never one of those, I just, you know, want to grow up and be an accountant. That wasn't what I was driven by. But so when I started in accounting, what one thing that auditing does, I was at Arthur Andersen, and, you know, it teaches you, it enables you to see many different types of businesses and be a part of their business while you're doing the audit or when you're doing a M&A consulting assignment. And so I always had a much broader interest in sort of what drives a business and what enables a business to grow of all types. And so that put me in the framework of always trying to understand something that was outside of what my current responsibilities were. And so that's why I went from sort of accounting into broader finance. I then got really interested in sort of, you know, what are the growth drivers of a business? And that's what made general management or running a company of interest, really trying to understand how all of these various functions come together in order to execute a strategy, whether it's marketing or sales or HR or finance. They all work together towards the goal of helping grow a company. And then, you know, I got some advice while I was at PayPal. Bill Reddy, who recently left, said to me that, you know, if you think about what any company needs in order to grow. It's the people. The people are at the center of success of a company or the failure of a company. And so getting to understand what actually drives all of the various aspects of the people function. I didn't even know all of the aspects that went into a people function. You know, there's everything from compensation and benefits to recruiting or talent acquisition. There's the HR business partners that advise the business folks as to how to integrate people strategies into their parts of the business. And then there's all the back end, you know, systems and processes to enable an employee to onboard, be successful during their career development, all the way to the offboarding. And so it was sort of the center of what's driving a company internally. And so it was a very valuable thing to learn. And so I think, you know, for me, all of these various parts of the business are extremely fundamental in terms of how to grow and be successful in market. I feel like all of those different things have enabled me to be more successful in the current role that I have now.
And it's interesting too, because you've had very left brain and right brain experiences in terms of how you really look at the levers of the business.
I have, yeah. And I think that's actually part of when I think about leading a successful team or being in a leadership position and getting the very best out of your team, it really starts from fundamentally trying to understand what drives the individuals on your team and what they're looking to get out of their experience at work. And then using that to build the very best diverse teams that are ready and able to tackle whatever the challenge is, because it does require left brain and right brain on most business problems in order to be successful. And so, you know, coming in with a wide perspective enables me to see what's driving folks on the other side of the table. How do I create a win-win for everyone on the team and for whoever we're looking to do business with? And so I think that mindset is incredibly important and something that I've learned by being in a lot of different parts of the business and being able, therefore, to work with, you know, lots of different disciplines across my career.
And, you know, we hear a lot about motivating people and the importance of knowing people as individuals, but of course it's easier said than done, right?
Right.
What have you found to be the most successful ways to do that?
I mean, I think just asking, you know, I fundamentally believe that direct conversations and honest conversations are the only way to operate, both because it really enables you to get to the bottom of what's important to people, but also because I believe it's my responsibility whether I'm delivering bad news or good news to an individual, you know, that being direct and honest is the best way to operate. Because, you know, even if I'm telling an individual on a team that I don't believe that in their current role, they're going to be able to achieve what they're looking to achieve, either because I don't feel like they have the skill sets or the potential to get those skill sets, or because there isn't a business need that would accommodate what they're looking to do, it's just as important that I'm honest with them, because I am responsible not just for their career while they're on my team, but in helping them to develop to their aspirations and their potential. And that may mean that it's not on the team that I'm running, or it's not in the company that they're currently in. And I think that, you know, that's always been my perspective. And as a result, I've been able to build very loyal teams that I've worked with at lots of places that I've worked, either the various groups that I've worked in within PayPal or eBay or Rent.com, or even when I left and joined Chan Zuckerberg, I was able to build a team that included people that I'd worked with in the past that really appreciated that was the approach that I took in helping them with their career.
This is really interesting, because this is an area that, as you know, many people struggle with, you know, the idea of giving someone feedback they may not want to hear.
Right.
And how do you approach it? So what I'm looking for here is, how could we just help some of our listeners with how to get their head wrapped around that conversation?
I mean, I think first, what helps me is I think about what I would appreciate knowing if I was on the other side of the table. And for me, I want to know what people are thinking, what they're, you know, not saying that they really want to say. And I think that you do best if you have full information. And so that's what I try to think about going into it. I do a lot of thinking and practicing in my head when I'm going to have a difficult conversation, because it never gets easier when you're going to disappoint someone across the table or you're going to have to tell them something they might not want to hear. And so I think that, you know, sort of practicing in your head what you're going to say is important. And then I usually start the conversation by just saying, you know, look, I want to be honest with you. I want to have a straightforward conversation. I want to make sure that I'm able to give you full information because I do care about you. I do care about, you know, your success, but that requires that we're able to have a very direct conversation. And so I sort of just like throw it out there and say it. And I think it makes both people more comfortable in starting that conversation.
And I know you have a real reputation for being very empathetic as well as smart and dynamic, but I think it's so important for everyone listening to realize how critical it is to have those conversations, because often the other person already knows it too, right? And getting it out in the open is the only way you can solve it together.
Yeah, and I think that is part of it. I think part of it is saying, you know, so how do we tackle this together? How can I help? You know, giving the person an opportunity to hear it, to let it sink in. So maybe not continuing the whole conversation right then, but then, you know, coming back to it to be able to help that person with whatever's next. And I think that, you know, that's often appreciated because the person might need help with, you know, how to think about next steps, whether that's, you know, in the role, in a different role, within the company, at a different company. I think showing that you really do want to help them land in the best place means that you can't just let it go after that first conversation and sort of, you know, wipe your hands of it.
Right. And sometimes as leaders, we end up focusing on the people who need the most help and we forget some of our highest performers. How do you really keep those conversations going as well?
Yeah, you know, I think it's the same thing. I think, you know, especially the high performers are typically the most ambitious and therefore are extremely focused on ensuring that they are progressing, whatever that means for them. And so I think it's important to know what that means for them and to have that in the back of your mind as you're forming your teams or as, you know, you're executing on a strategy, thinking about how you can integrate that person either on your team or potentially giving them opportunities outside of your team that helps them realize their aspirations. And so, you know, I think it's as important, if not more, that when you see someone with talent, that you're thinking beyond your own team and you're really thinking about how to get the very best out of that person, even if it means giving them up on your team.
And as you're talking about giving them up, I assume you're talking about it other places at PayPal, find it like sponsoring versus mentoring. Is that some of what you're thinking about?
Absolutely. But I think that's part of it. But I also, in my career, have advised and helped people leave the companies where I've worked. If they have an opportunity that I think really helps them reach their aspiration, and I think that it's an easier path or a better path or a faster path than a position within, either because of what's going on with the teams that they're on or where the company's going versus where they're trying to go. And so I think it goes broader than the team or the company where you work.
Do you have any other tips that you just want to share with people as you're thinking about what makes the most effective leaders?
I definitely think that what can be the hardest within a company as it scales is making sure that all of the various parts of the company are collaborating and working together well. And so I think checking in on how that's working often is really important. There's a natural tendency to silo within the part of the organization that you work, yet all of these different parts of the company are dependent on each other because everyone plays sort of a part in getting strategy executed. And so I think, you know, sort of checking on the collaborative nature or ensuring that folks are keeping in mind the stakeholders of the work that they're doing and doing that often is really important, because I think that the failure of a strategy is usually tied to that in some way. As if you can have the very best strategy, but if the teams aren't working together to ensure that they're sort of, you know, operating together towards the goal, then that's usually a big part of why a strategy fails. And so I think that constantly checking on how the teams are executing and whether they're executing synergistically with the other dependent areas is super important.
And what do you find is the most effective way to do that check-in?
I think it's getting together in some form, like having a representative from the teams that need to work together and checking in along the way. And that could be an in-person, it could be email check-in where everyone's sort of talking about where they are in the particular body of work. It could be a phone call, a video. There's lots of different ways, but I think it is allowing the various teams to hear from each other that they're on the same track or not. And that's when things come up where it's like, well, yeah, but I thought you were going to do this, and instead you're here. What's changed?
And you talked a lot about various things leaders should do in terms of leading. What do you think leaders most need to let go of?
I think that a lot of us have a tendency to look to the way they've done things or the way they've been successful and sort of use it as a guide to how everyone else should do things. But I think that the magic is in sort of letting go of your own beliefs and letting go of the path that made you successful, and instead really trying to understand what drives individuals together on a team. And really appreciating how lots of different paths, lots of different perspectives is what makes things successful, bringing that together. So I think it's letting go of your own belief system and just sort of listening and trying to understand what drives individuals.
How do you check yourself when you feel that you're sort of smitten with your own belief or your own idea?
I think it's by hearing other people's. And then trying to understand, am I thinking about this only from my perspective, or do other people share this? It is asking other people what they think. And hearing other perspectives requires that you ask people what their perspectives are a lot of times. When I find myself doing a lot of talking and a lot of preaching and a lot of setting direction, it means it's time for me to check in and make sure that people are aligned with where we're going.
So Peggy, is there anything else I should have asked you?
I think we covered a lot. I think we had a great conversation.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's terrific.
No, this is fun.
Thanks so much to Peggy for sharing her leadership story and journey with us. A few of her tenets really stood out to me. First, it's good business to seek a wide, full perspective from many types of people before making a decision. Soliciting input across a diverse group helps you make the best, most informed decision possible. Second, at a fundamental level, work to understand what drives and motivates the individual people on your team. What are they looking to get out of their experience at work? What motivates them? Why do they show up? Third, give direct and honest feedback. It's essential. Peggy first practices tough conversations in her head. When live, she begins a conversation with being crystal clear about why she's giving the feedback and how she's going to deliver it. Thanks to Peggy and thanks to you for listening to Let Go and Lead. To automatically receive future episodes, please subscribe. Until next time.